Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. There are many more podcasts for this and all of our other faith radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast. Well, good morning and welcome back to the Faith Radio Network. Are you an emotionally intelligent person? What about the people you work with or your boss? Joining us to explain the importance of emotional intelligence on the job is clinical psychologist and author Dr. Bill Diamond. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good morning, Bill. I'm doing well, and it's great to be back with you folks.
So let's define emotional intelligence. It is really a completely different animal from IQ, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, there's an old joke, if you're so happy, I don't know that your face got the memo. And when we're talking about people that are not emotionally intelligent, the key thing that they're lacking is self-awareness. So that is kind of the mother of all emotional intelligence traits. Without that, none of the other things we're going to talk about are possible. But that is the number one thing that we want to be aware of, is to know ourselves. And so there's several different sections that writers and assessment people break emotional intelligence down into, and we can walk through those if you'd like.
I'd love to. Let me ask you first, though, is emotional intelligence an inborn trait, or is it something that can be learned and developed?
Well, you know, there's always this nature-nurture debate, and I'm sure there's some genetics to emotional intelligence, but generally what we believe is that emotional intelligence is not fixed in the same way that our general intelligence might be a little bit more fixed, although that's being challenged of late as well. But we do believe that if you understand yourself and begin to address some of those areas that need help, your emotional intelligence can change dramatically over a half a year or so, but it takes that focus. So it's not fixed. That we don't really see it's mainly fixed. We think it's flexible.
So what are some of the dimensions of emotional intelligence as we're thinking about, let's say, our own life or the life of those that we work with or those in our family or we go to church with? What are some of the things that we're talking about here?
Well, the first main area they break down is what they call self-perception. You know, how do you feel about yourself? Do you feel like you're going through life doing what you said you would do, keeping your promises? Do you feel stymied? Are you aware of your own emotions? That self-perception piece is huge. And a lot of people are very intelligent, but they don't like themselves that much. They don't feel like they're doing what they need to do in life, and they may not even know why. So that's a huge part of that. The next one would be what we call self-expression. And these are people that are assertive. They're independent in what they say and what they do, not in a way that's not healthy or not biblical, but they're able to stand alone when they need to. And they're able to express their emotions constructively. They don't just burst out. They're able to show even anger at times, but we might call righteous anger. That's a big debate. Do you ever show anger? Is it okay to do that in the workplace? Is it okay to do that at home? Is it only okay if it's for other people? But people that are good in the self-expression component of emotional intelligence really are able to be assertive and have that balance there.
So they not only can identify their own feelings inside, but they're able to express them in a constructive way.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of nice people that can't really tell you what they're feeling. And yet there is a process of beginning to understand that. Some people naturally do. Sometimes people journal. Sometimes people work with a counselor. They begin to identify all the different complex feelings they may feel and be able to express them. You know, if we have the vocabulary, we have the insight, we are a lot more elegant in our ability to tell other people, people we love, how we're feeling. And that's a real sign of emotional intelligence there. And then there are people that just in general are great interacting with others, and that's kind of a no-brainer, but people that are emotionally intelligent have good interpersonal relationships in general. They're empathetic, they have a heart for others, they're involved with service and ministry, and they're socially conscious and helpful. They're not all about themselves. They're really somebody that people would say, you know, I like being around that person, they get me, they understand me, they care, they're other-centered. And that's something that I think a lot of people have, but maybe lack the first couple we talked about and some of the others. But you need to have all of them, but the interpersonal component is very obvious when it's missing.
Bill, another aspect of emotional intelligence is our ability to make decisions, and that can be in all aspects of our life, but particularly when it comes to work, that's critical, isn't it?
Absolutely. You ever met, Bill, a really nice person that just can't make a key decision? They somewhat regress. They look for you to do it. They delay. They don't want to get it wrong.
Let me think about that, Bill. You tell me.
There you go. You have just illustrated what we're talking about here. But, you know, problem solving is something that many corporations even teach as a course. So that kind of goes back to the idea, if these were things that either you have or you don't, why would there be a course in critical thinking and problem solving, project management? These are tools for the toolbox that can be learned. And so when people are not good at that, that's an issue. Reality testing is something else that kind of falls within this, the idea that it's good to be optimistic, but when people are completely disconnected from the reality of what's going to happen, they believe their book's going to be a bestseller, but they've not done any work to market it. They just have this feeling in their heart. Sometimes we say, hey, you know, 2 points for being positive, 2 points for having faith, but this doesn't really square with reality. And then, of course, people who struggle with impulse, that's a part of the decision-making area as well. And these are people that can't wait and can't think through what's the right option. They just kind of go with their feelings. So you can have too many feelings, you can have too few, but if you're ruled by them, obviously that's not very emotionally intelligent.
Then finally, the last component is stress management, Bill. Explain how that plays out.
Yes. Well, I think we know a lot of people, and maybe we struggled where we're intelligent, we're caring, we get along well with people, but boy, we do not handle our stress well. And sometimes it's about being flexible. Other times it's about having good boundaries. I think, you know, we're talking to a lot of people of faith today, and they may feel with their Christian faith that they can't say no, that they can't disappoint people, that they can't hurt people's feelings. And yet, if you do not do some of those things, you're going to be completely wrung out and unable to stay in the game. And so knowing when you need to set some boundaries, knowing your limits, keeping an optimistic viewpoint, is absolutely huge. And there's another one of these that kind of goes along with stress management, and that is just your general happiness score. And there's lots of people that have great hearts that they may be somewhat optimistic, but they're dealing with some sadness, some depression, and that is part of our emotions as well. So those five areas, the self-perception, how well we know ourselves, how well we express our emotions, how well we get along with people, that interpersonal component, whether we can make some tough decisions and do it in reality, and how we handle stress in our mood. Those are the five major components of emotional intelligence.
We're talking to Dr. Bill Diamond. He's the author of Fire Your Excuses. Coming up next, what is an emotional vampire, and do you work with one? Stick with us here on the Faith Radio Network.
I'm Joe Bender. Join me as we connect faith to life Fridays at noon.
Welcome back. It's Bill Meyer here on the Faith Radio Network. So great to have you with us. My guest is Dr. Bill Diamond. He's a clinical psychologist and author. His book is called Fire Your Excuses. We've been talking about emotional intelligence, what it is, can it be learned, and how does it affect you on the job? And Bill, some people who are lacking in emotional intelligence can actually be emotional vampires. And there are several types of those that we need to watch out for on the job or even in our own extended family. Describe the behavior of each of these different types of vampires and how we can protect ourselves from these people.
Sure. You know, we think about vampires, we think about people or monsters that suck the life out of us. And so whether it's a family member or a boss, and there's a lot that's been written about bosses that are not healthy, but there's three major ones that we see, and we throw around the term sociopath a lot. That's a pretty fancy, scary word, but the clinical word we use is called antisocial, and these antisocial people are people that get excitement by taking advantage of people. They think about the ends justifying the means. They don't really conform with the rules and regulations. They just kind of feel like they want to get what they want to get. They're not opposed to lying or not planning. They're aggressive and irritable, and they don't show a lot of remorse over that. Maybe you have worked with people that rationalize how they treated you. They just kind of feel like, hey, this is business. And if they're in a church setting, it's really puzzling because you feel like, wow, you know, isn't that antithetical to how we're supposed to be? But there are lots of people that struggle with this personality or character issue that you're going to meet at work. And some of them have risen to the top and are now your boss. And that makes it challenging.
Why is it that we reward these individuals by making them often CEOs of corporations, Bill?
Well, I'll give you an area where you see this a lot, and I'm going to get in trouble with my healthcare friends, but suppose Dr. X has an incredible treatment of a very scary illness. And not only does he have this down, but he brings in millions of dollars into a certain hospital. Sometimes I'm asked to go out and help the rest of the staff dance around Dr. X's antisocial behavior because he's the cash cow. And so sometimes when people bring enough money into the organization or they're the boss and they pull the purse strings, people dance around them. And you see this a lot when there's a disparity between people's personality and what money they're bringing to the firm or to the hospital or to the organization. So I think people look the other way, or these kind of people are already in charge, which makes it tough.
So how do you protect yourself from one of these emotional vampires?
Well, the first thing, of course, is you've got to realize that people play fast and loose with ethics, and they may just in a matter of course ask you to do something that's unethical or illegal. And it just seems that it comes at you pretty often. And sometimes that's a job-ending stand that you have to take. But other times you can just say, hey, I'm not going to do that. I know what you want me to do, but I'm not comfortable with that. You may find that person is abusive, and you have to decide whether it's worth it to stay calm in that attack or to look elsewhere. Sometimes it's good to talk to somebody, a counselor or an EAP person, employee assistance, just to role play how to deal with that. And then ask for time to think. Sometimes antisocial people will insult you because you won't make a decision in the moment like they will. But the real goal is to get you to do what they want to do. And they know that if you take some time to think about it, you're going to say no. So when you know that a person struggles with this and they use this, you're going to need to buy some time to make sure that you're not spun into an area you don't want to go.
Great advice. Another type of emotional vampire is the histrionic personality type. Explain what that looks like.
Yeah, this is a person that's less nefarious, but more about drama and emotions. Maybe they're a tornado and they struggle with their own emotional control. We talked before, as you know, about emotional intelligence. And one of the traits is their self-expression. So histrionics really struggle in this area. They tend to get spun up. They tend to be highly emotional. They need a lot of approval. They are very influenced by others. They're just all over the place, and they may seek attention. They may be on stage, if you will, or they may just be struggling with their mood. Sometimes they're a little bit seductive, and that doesn't have to be sexual. It could be using their emotions to get what they want, but it has a different feel than a sociopath. It's more of a person that's all out there in your face, and you have to be aware that this person is going to bring a lot of emotional turmoil or a lot of attention to themselves.
If you work with someone who has a histrionic personality, what do you do?
Well, you've got to ignore them to some degree. You have to kind of act as if, in spite of their emotions, what's the right thing to do? And I remember my dad helping me with that, you know, kind of saying, hey, if this person was not this way, or how would you act? How would you act as a Christian to this person, regardless of what they're trying to do, regardless of whether they're trying to manipulate? Would you be consistent in what you're going to do and what you're not going to do? Now, there's times where you say, hey, because you're acting this way, I'm not going to follow through until you stop. There's other times you say, hey, you know what? I'm giving this to you because it's the right thing, not because of what you said and did. And you have to pick your battles. But there's times where I've literally said that, you know, I'm giving you this because it's the right thing. But I got to tell you, if it continues this way, I probably will just not engage because it's just too much. So, again, just like a kid that is trying to get the family's attention and just won't let up and dancing around the dinner table and you're on vacation, you may need to ignore. You may need to ask them to make some decisions, and you may need to set some limits and say, hey, the ship's moving, and we're all on board, and I know you're having a tough time. If you don't think you can do it, we're heading out, but this is the time the boat is leaving the dock, and that can be very helpful.
Bill, there's one final type of emotional vampire we need to watch out for at work. And who are those folks?
Well, the last one is the narcissist. And I think we all kind of have a sense of what the narcissist is, a person that's all about themselves. They think they're the greatest, the best. They're the all-around, you know, king of the office or queen of the office. They don't care about you. When they have problems, everybody else's problems don't matter. And to protect yourself, you've got to recognize what you're dealing with. And I like the old expression, don't expect a lemon tree to give you oranges. If you go to a lemon tree every single time without fail, you're only going to be able to make lemonade. You go to a narcissist and expect them not to be a narcissist, you're not going to get anything different. So you may know people like that in your family. You may know people like that at work. You may work for somebody like that. It's not 100% of a no-go when you have somebody like that as a boss, but you have to kind of weigh the cost-benefit, and you've got to lower your expectations. You do have to recognize that they may change the rules. They may not follow through. You may need to get paid up front. They may promise you and then have all these reasons why they couldn't pay, it didn't happen, they didn't say that. So have a healthy sense of distrust. Recognize that these narcissists are probably not going to change, and you're going to have to decide whether or not it's worth it to stick around. So that's the last one that you deal with at work. But we talked about those three, and narcissism is one that I think we're probably among the most familiar with.
Dr. Bill Diamond, thanks so much for your time today. Bill's book is called Fire Your Excuses. You can learn more at fireyourexcuses.com. Thanks, Bill. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, you can visit our program page at myfaithradio.com.